The Ghost Goal Podcast.
Upsets are back on the menu in both the Premier League and Champions League, as both Manchester clubs suffered surprise losses to Wolves and Crystal Palace last weekend, before Manchester United reprised their role earlier today, suffering a 3-2 loss at home to Galatasaray in the Champions League. All that going along with a Arsenal disappointing loss at Lens. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 425. We got plenty to get through today, as I mentioned, Javier. But first of all,
we're not unbeaten
doing?
Anymore, Alex. I'm very sad. I'm sad that we're unbeaten. We were unbeaten all the way through September. As soon as October comes, it gets taken away from me. I wanted it longer. I didn't think this was going to be the game we were going to lose. But we lost a bunch. We missed a lot of chances when we were up 1-0, and then again when it was 1-1, we could have made it 2-1 just three or four times and fluffed our lines. Good saves as well from the Lens keeper, and then they honestly Lens had a couple great chances as well that they missed, and then finally ended up getting a couple of goals. So it could have been, I think, a draw would have been the fair result there. But yeah, a little bit disappointed about that Champions League game, but I don't think it should affect us too much.
Well, yeah, it can't, because there's a big matchup coming up with Manchester City this weekend that you guys have to pick yourselves up and dust yourselves off and get ready for that one. But we'll get to that in a little bit. We do have to start this week with, I mean, where else but that Tottenham-Liverpool game on Saturday. It ended with Tottenham winning 2-1. There were multiple red cards. There was one of the most abominable mess-ups by the VAR review team for Luis Diaz's goal that, you know, was called as offside, reviewed, and even though he was onside, not allowed. But Tottenham ended up getting out of there with a win and still unbeaten themselves 2-1 with a late own goal from Joel Matip. What was your response, you know, following such an eventful game? Yeah, what were you thinking after that one?
I mean, the fact that the VAR, you know, you were just talking about this to me, telling me about this right before we started this pod, Alex, but the fact that the referee made the, you know, there was a communication error that the VAR just didn't know that the on-field decision was a goal, and then
the opposite. The on-field decision was no goal because the linesman raised his flag. They went up to the booth to review it, and the VAR official who was giving like the recommendation whether to allow or not allow the goal, that VAR official assumed that the call on the field was a goal. So when he said, all clear, you're good to go, the referee and linesman took that to mean, okay, our decision was correct, it's not a goal. And then, and I'm saying this from the audio of their communications that's been released earlier today on Tuesday, the VAR official just starts effing and blinding, like cursing himself out for, you know, messing it up. And yeah, we've had some high profile mess ups by VAR in the 3 or 4 years since it's been in the Premier League, but this one really took the cake, especially, you know, with the impact it had on the game. It was 0-0 at the time, would have been 1-0 Liverpool. There eventually ended up being a red card soon after. Well, Tottenham scored right after to go up 1-0, and there ended up being a red card on Curtis Jones. Who knows if like any of the events of that game,
by the way, I thought that red card was absolutely ridiculous. Like, there's no way that can be a red card ever. I mean, he was going for the ball. The ball hit the top.
It is.
His foot trajectory was changed by something, by the ball, and bounced off the ball and onto the man. Like, what can he do about that? That's just, I don't know.
Well, we're talking about like a similar thing that happened last week when Chelsea lost to Aston Villa, when Malo Gusto got sent off, even though he got the ball clearly before getting any of the men. The new interpretation of the rules that's been brought in for this season basically says it doesn't matter what your intent is. It doesn't matter whether you get the ball first. If it's in any way dangerous to the opposition player, it's going to be looked at for a red card. And, you know, we do cry a lot about these decisions, and usually the cry is that they be consistent. So you got to hand it to them. They're at least being consistent. but it just feels wrong. Like I would like to go back to some sort of interpretation of the rule that, you know, referees and VAR officials can use a little bit of discretion to see, like, oh, did the player mean that? Is it a nasty tackle that's like specifically with the intention of hurting a player or bringing him down to prevent him from a goal scoring opportunity? Accidental stuff like that has been part of the game for decades and isn't going to go away. And I'm not sure yet what the effects of, you know, players, you know, reacting and changing their behavior to accommodate that is going to be, but they are going to change. It feels really drastic, like just like right off the bat, like 7 or 8 games into the season, we've seen a bunch of red cards that we think, like, how is that a red? So I feel bad for Liverpool fans. It takes a lot for me to say that. You know, it's not just the Luis Diaz goal that they screwed up. It's that red card as well. And I think the other sending off for Diogo Jota later in the game for a second yellow card, I believe they're challenging that to try and get that overturned. It was just a frustration tackle that got Jota a second yellow card. I didn't see what the first one was for. But maybe they get a little bit of a break and they can get like one of those red cards overturned. But in terms of the game itself, I actually think Liverpool fans should be coming out of this one, despite like the frustration of losing it right at the end there. They should be coming out of this like very proud of their team, because to hang on with 10 men for most of the game and then eventually 9 men and, you know, defend pretty well for most of that game against the Tottenham team that's, you know, flying very high at the moment, I think there's a lot of positives they can take from that. Just a few weeks before, we saw them go to Newcastle, go down to 10 men, be losing for most of the game, and then 2 quick goals from Nunez won them the game. This time, it didn't end up going that way, but they still showed the same level of, you know, spirit and fight to, you know, maintain the result. And just got like a really unlucky bounce from the cross off of Matip into the goal in like the very last minute of injury time. I guess I've covered Liverpool. What are your thoughts on like Tottenham after these 2 games away at Arsenal and home against Liverpool? They come away with 4 points from those 2 games.
Yeah, I mean,
are we taking them seriously now?
I've been saying it. I think they're, you know, right in it to get that 4th place. I think they're going to have to compete with the likes of Newcastle and Manchester United, though, to get it. So it's a long season. You know, there's a lot of results that can happen, a lot of things that can happen, injuries. So right now, yeah, sure, they look like it. But if it's Christmas time and it's still like this, then we can really, I think, revisit the topic more thoroughly then. But right now, it looks like they're contenders. But I think it's too early to say something like they're guaranteed to get top 4 or be in a title race at all yet, even though they're in 2nd place right now. It's too early. I mean, we've seen managers come in and do well early on, and then, you know, a little bit later in the season, it doesn't go as well. So I do think Ange is I dislike that Ange is such a likable guy. He seems like a really solid guy. And like, for once, Tottenham have a manager that seems like he makes sense and has a clear philosophy and way of playing and thinking, and it's something that can bring harmony to a club. I've talked about this before, but like, when everyone's thinking in the same way and in the same direction, it can just bring good results. And if Ange is given time, and, you know, Tottenham, they give managers time, especially if they're doing well. This good start, I think, can only buy him time enough to mold a team. So I think right now, the fact that Tottenham are pretty good right now, I mean, that means in a year or 2 years, Tottenham are going to probably, if the way that this project seems like it's going right now for them, if it keeps going in this trajectory, it seems like they're only going up, which is a scary prospect and not one that I like to, to have to imagine.
All right, well, let's move on to the first of the major upsets of the weekend. During that 10 a.m. time slot, there were, I think, 6 different games going on, and Manchester City ended up going to Wolves, falling behind, getting an equalizer, and then conceding another or a second goal, and ended up losing 2-1. I did have this one on, even though, you know, my eyes were mainly focused on the Manchester United Crystal Palace game from how early United were down in that. I just kind of assumed City were going to, you know, falter a little bit and then, you know, get it together and eventually win the game. But no, the first game without Rodri in the Premier League since that red card against Nottingham Forest, they end up looking like pretty disjointed in midfield. And I think for you as an Arsenal fan, Javier, you should be looking at that with a little bit of hope for the coming weekend, because that connection, even though they had good players out, you know, players like Kovacic and Mateus Nunez, two new signings in midfield, it looked like there was some sorting out to do over.
We're doing our way too early preview right now.
Sure. No, I'm still talking about the Wolves game.
In this Wolves game, I was going to say, I mean, what a statement though from Wolves, because their star player, I don't know if you guys, you know, a lot of people might not know the story, but Mateus Nunez basically threw a hissy fit at the end of the transfer window, stopped going to practice, stopped responding to like any communication from the club, like pretty much everyone at the club, didn't say goodbye to anyone basically, and forced a move to Manchester City because the club didn't want to sell him, and City were only willing to bid like a certain amount, and because he was trying to force a move, they didn't get the amount of money that they wanted for him, which is not, I mean, they ended up getting a lot of money, but they paid a lot of money for him in the first place, and I think it's clear that he was worth a lot more, especially in the current market, than what they sold him. But City kind of like unsettled the player and made him, you know, go there. So the fact that this team showed up and, you know, beat Manchester City, I think number one, that Wolves are a bogey team for them, because I think they've gotten results against City almost every season. They get a draw or a win when you don't expect. I think they did the double over City, I think, a few years back. But yeah, they for some reason have a great record against Manchester City, and yeah, cheers to them.
Well, we've seen these results for Manchester City early in the season before, and it hasn't
mattered to panic.
One lick. If anything, obviously the Rodri, no Rodri is still, you know, an issue for them going into that big game against Arsenal this weekend. But when they lose, they usually bounce back. It usually just pisses them off and gets a reaction out of them. So I wouldn't get your hopes up too much, I guess. I did want to just mention just how colossal Craig Dawson was at the back for Wolves. He stuck to Haaland like a flea and never let him out of his sight. I think Haaland only had like one good chance, and even that, it came like midway through the second half on his left foot off to the left side of the goal, and he kind of fluffed it. And, you know, that we're not used to seeing that from Erling Haaland. Erling Haaland is, you know, usually so good that he ends up getting himself like a bunch of chances. And if he misses a couple of them, it's not that surprising, but he usually takes at least one of those four or five chances he gets in a game. So, yeah, credit to Wolves. I'm sure you're not feeling great. Did you pick them to get relegated in the end when we revised our relegation picks?
I did. It's not looking great on that one, Alex. But you know, we'll see. I'm going to stick to it right now. I don't know if this win. It was a great win, but I think that there was more to it. You know, the players were like extra motivated to get a result against City, and I don't know if that's going to be the rest of the season. So let's see if they can kick on from this.
It would be peak comedy for Wolves to get relegated but have a win against Manchester City under their belts. I think the last team to do that was Norwich when they got relegated, like, and were the very bottom of the league but somehow beat Manchester City at home. So that's by far the biggest upset of the weekend, and brings us to another big upset, yet somehow we're not that surprised that Manchester United lost 1-0 at home to Crystal Palace. A Joachim Anderson set-piece goal, a lovely volley in the 25th minute, got Roy Hodgson's men the lead, and they held on to that for the rest of the game. And United were just as frustrated then as they were today when they followed that up with a loss at home to Galatasaray in the Champions League. They had the lead twice in the Champions League game, threw it away soon after in both instances, and then made awful mistakes to concede the winner a few minutes from full time. So United went from, you know, potentially turning their season around with wins you'd expect from them against teams like Burnley and Crystal Palace in the Cup in midweek, to now they're back on like suicide watch, you know, with two losses in, you know, the two competitions that actually matter. You know,
it's
one thing to beat Crystal Palace 3-0 in the Carabao Cup. Now. But then you follow that up by losing to them in the league, the competition that really matters, and then choking multiple leads against Galatasaray. Now,
do you think a straight red card for Casemiro.
Yeah, so he's going to miss the next Champions League game. Yeah, from the penalty he gave away. Oh, a rough week for Manchester United. Are we worried for Ten Hag? How much more of this can he take before the he gets the sack?
I think this is the player's fault. I think you have to just stick with the manager at this point. You're not going to get relegated this season. I think our picking them for top four doesn't look good right now.
Oh no, I feel terrible about that, especially since the Lisandro Martinez injury. That's probably going to keep him out for at least a couple of months. He's by far their best defensive player, and if you go back and watch some of the chances they gave up to Galatasaray today, their defense was wide open, even with a multiple-time Champions League winner like Varane in there with Casemiro shielding in front of him. It's a mess defensively there. There is a slight bright spark up in attack with Højlund, and he's started to look much more active and scoring goals and giving defenders nightmares. But all that doesn't mean shit if you're, conceding chances like, take your pick. The Icardi winner today with Amrabat keeping him offside keeping him onside at left back. No, but I don't blame Amrabat specifically. He's being played at left back and actually being told to stay in that left back position when he's been a defensive midfielder his whole life. He doesn't know how to stay, keep the offside line and keep the offside trap. That's not part of his how he was raised. So yeah, they need a player like Luke Shaw and Malacia. They need some options back because right now, even with Varane coming back from injury and bringing Amrabat into the squad, they don't have enough control of these games and they play far too wide open. And while I agree with you that there are issues with the players specifically, and it's not Ten Hag's fault completely, Ten Hag does need to accept that with the amount of injuries they have, adjustments need to be made. You can't play full total football when you don't have, half of your starting lineup. But obviously from, the results and the performances we've seen, the players that are available aren't capable of doing it. So, maybe play a little bit more on the counterattack. I know that's not where they want to end up, but for him to still be the manager, for them to end up being this, total football attacking side, he does need to adjust and, maybe make some concessions in, how he wants to play a little bit just to get the results to keep him in the job. And I say the same thing of Pochettino when we're going through our bad runs to start the season at Chelsea. There's no point playing this open attacking football if you don't have the players to do it. You got to keep yourself in the job enough to.
You got
to
admit though, they've been incredibly unlucky with injuries though as well, with center backs, red cards and stuff like that. So I think getting Varane back. I think once they have their full team back, I think you can talk about it then. I think. If
that
they
won't
had
be
their full
Christmas.
Team,
and the season, and their chances for this season having a good season are going to be over.
Season.
By the time they get their full team back, there'll be another injury to consider. It's trust me, I have the experience with this. This has been my life as a Chelsea fan these last season and a half. But I digress. What do we want to move on to next? Because there's tons of big results that we could hit on. You know what? I'm going to do it. We haven't had the chance to talk about Chelsea in positive terms for a while now. So I'm just going to mention real quick, Chelsea did get a win in the Premier League against a non-championship side like Luton for the first time this season. They beat Fulham 2-0 at Craven Cottage on Monday night. Two goals in the 18th and 19th minute, one from Mykhailo Mudryk, his first for Chelsea, and one from Armando Broja. Sealed the win, and the rest of the game was a little bit of a formality. It was nice to see positive results, especially away from home. Those have not been easy to come by for Chelsea. But it does feel a little bit of a Pyrrhic victory because Mudryk scored the goal and then came off at halftime with an injury. Moises Caicedo was a monster in midfield along with Enzo and Conor Gallagher. And he came off the field with an injury at about the 60th or 70th minute.
Damn, you guys can't catch a break with these injuries.
There are no breaks with injuries for Chelsea. It's just, one nice moment followed by two awful moments, one step forward, two steps back. That's all this Chelsea season has been so far.
I don't remember the last time. Well, I do remember actually the last time Chelsea got two wins in a row. Do you know when that was, Alex?
That was when your dad went to England, and did he happen? Have you seen him this weekend, or was he over at these games?
Yes, I saw him this weekend. Yeah, no, I saw him. Okay.
Are you sure that wasn't some kind of clone, and he was actually at Craven Cottage on Monday night and at the Bridge last Wednesday?
Right. No, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you guys got back-to-back wins again, Alex. It happened for the second time this year. Are you proud of your club?
I'm just happy that they didn't let me down, you know?
Hey, you could go for three here, Alex.
Who knows? We should be going for three, but knowing us, we'll probably draw 1-1 and get the lead and then give it away with a couple minutes left. It's just nice to get at least some points on the board before we have to go play, you know, Arsenal at home, City at home, Tottenham away.
Burnley did just get their first win of the season, Alex.
Yes, against Luton, the aforementioned Championship side. So I'm not putting too much stock in that, but we'll see how that goes on Saturday. Speaking of Luton, they did get their first win as well last weekend. They went to Goodison Park, beat Everton 2-1, got two goals about 7 minutes apart from each other in the first half from Tom Lockyer and Carlton Morris. Everton got one back just before halftime, but they couldn't push on and get the equalizer or winner. So after a couple of weeks of thinking like, oh, Everton, maybe signs of life, maybe they're not going to be relegation fodder after that win at Brentford. Now all of a sudden they lost to Luton, who I maintain are a team that no team in the Premier League should be dropping any points to them. Does that seem harsh to you?
No, I agree with you, Alex, but I mean, this was Luton's run of the season, right? They got to play against Everton, they got to play against Burnley, picked up some points, I think much needed, but I don't know how many more they'll be picking up from teams above them. I don't think very many. I think maybe Sheffield United, that's a game they can target, but Sheffield's the only team that hasn't gotten a win yet. They look horrible. I know we were talking about them. I was talking about them being a little bit better than I thought, but hasn't shown yet in the results.
Yeah, I mean, by no means am I thinking that Luton can all of a sudden, you know, stave off relegation. I'm still picking them, Burnley and Sheffield, to get relegated, and I feel damn good about it. So, even with the draw against Wolves at home a few weeks ago, and then the win at Everton, I'm sure Luton, that loss today will bring them crashing right back down, especially at home to another promoted team like Burnley. That's got a sting for them. Where do we want to go to next, Javier? I'll let you pick.
It's got to be the 6-1 Aston Villa win over Brighton, Alex. I mean, that stands out very much so. Number one, because Watkins, we've been talking about him for a few weeks, finally bursts at the seam, gets a hat trick and two assists in this game. Aston Villa were absolutely amazing, but Brighton missed a bunch of chances. This game could have been different if Brighton had taken some of their earlier chances that they had. Aston Villa punished them well, and when they get going at home, it looks like they're, you know, pretty hard to stop. I think we're going to see them get some big results at home this season, like this one. You know, I think this not a very, very good Brighton side. And they spanked them 6-1.
Yeah, let me just pull up the Brighton lineup because I was really surprised by...
I think they didn't have Pascal Gross. I think that was the big miss there. They started like some kid that I'd never really seen play for them before.
Jack Hinshelwood. Yes, I'd never heard of him either. And you know, I love Evan Ferguson, the young Irish center forward. He started up top for them. And, you know, Brighton, a team that have... you know, come on as one of the better teams, better attacking possession teams in the league these last couple of years. They do their best when they're able to press teams from the front aggressively. And it just feels like Aston Villa had the master key or the one key to unlock Brighton once Brighton weren't able to press them. And Evan Ferguson, you know, he's a big target man. He's mobile enough. But their press was just non-existent with him and Welbeck, like playing a little bit more out on the right wing and Matoma on the left wing. It was tough. And also the midfield of Billy Gilmore and Jack Hinshelwood, there was just not enough like bite in the tackle to prevent Villa from their, how they love to counterattack on teams. And Villa, they just took advantage of them. I woke up for this game, came down and turned the game on, went to go make coffee around like the 10 minute mark. And when I came back, Brighton were 3-0 down. I was like, oh my God, this really escalated quickly. And you thought for a minute there, once Brighton made their substitutions at halftime, bringing on Fati and João Pedro and Tariq Lamptey, and they got that goal to make it 3-1 just after halftime from Ansu Fati, you thought, okay, maybe they can make a game of this. And then, you know, Ollie Watkins and company, they shut that down real quick and it became an embarrassment. So
the return of Jacob Ramsey, Alex, you could tell the Villa had missed him. He scored a beautiful goal there. Lovely crawler.
I just want to mention, for the first time, I heard Roberto De Zerbi mentioning players from other teams. He said after the game that, this game was a big example of like how much they're missing a player like Moises Caicedo. They have a signing from I think Lille that they made just before the end of the transfer window, Carlos Baleba, and he's a young like box to box slash defensive midfielder that he says is like intended to be Caicedo's replacement, but he just isn't ready to be that just yet. So it's not always going to be positive for Brighton when they lose big players like McAllister and Caicedo. There's going to be some growing pains, especially at a tough away ground like Villa Park. So I expect them to bounce back somewhat, but it's going to be tough with, even at home this weekend, they've got Liverpool coming in who are coming off a bad loss themselves. So we'll see how Brighton bounce back. Do you want to launch into these way too early previews? Or are there any more games from last weekend that you want to hit on?
Let's do it, Alex. What do you think is going to happen in this Arsenal Manchester City? I want to hear what you have to say first before I give my take on it. Manchester City will be without Rodri.
Will you guys be without Saka? He came off injured in that Champions League game today. No. In the first half. I think the answer is we don't know whether Saka is going to be available because he was kind of a doubt for the game today. It was a surprise that he played after coming off injured in the Bournemouth game.
And then
he came off in the first half for Vieira today. So we'll see if he's ready. I'm going to assume that he is going to be ready, but we've seen Saka play through injuries before and just look like a passenger sometimes, which, doesn't help anyone. That and a lot of the other injuries you guys have suffered from. Admittedly, you've got back Trossard
and Jesus is back as well.
Yeah. So
I think we start a midfield of Partey, Declan Rice, and Odegaard. And if we do that...
What, you lose 2-1 as opposed to 4-2?
No, I don't think we'd lose the game, Alex. I think we'd get a draw out of it. I'd like a draw.
But here's the thing. If you're going to challenge City for the league, you've got to beat them at least once. Preferably twice. And the home game against them, when they don't have the best defensive midfielder in the league... The pressure is on Arsenal
has
now.
To be a win.
You guys need to win this if you want to be serious about winning the league. It's you've got to start like sowing discord and doubt in the Manchester City team by giving them two losses in a row in the Premier League, and getting their heads a little bit. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think the best you guys can hope for is like a high scoring draw, like 2-2, something like that. I'm expecting a real bounce back game from Haaland. And even with like Saliba available and Rice available, no one's going to stick to Haaland in this game like a player like Craig Dawson did for Wolves, because Arsenal don't play like Wolves. They want to get on the ball, they want to progress the ball, and they leave space in behind. And that's food and drink for Haaland. He's going to get on the end of like a couple of good chances, and I think he'll finish this one with a brace. I'll say my official prediction is 3-2 City. How about you, Javier?
I don't know how much of a miss Saka will be in terms of, if he does play a while and then has to come off in the 60th minute. Hopefully he can, give a lot during those 60 minutes and we can bring on someone like a Reece Nelson or Emile Smith Rowe. I think we still have good players to bring off the bench. I do think that midfield could be a problem for Manchester City, but I don't know how much of a cutting edge we're going to have with players like Nketiah and Gabriel Jesus. I think Jesus looks to be on pretty good form right now, and back to fitness. I think that's a big positive for us as well. Odegaard as well. You know, Kai Havertz got his first goal for us, Alex. Did you see that at all? You know, Odegaard gave him a penalty.
Yeah, the pity penalty.
We love a pity penalty. And then we had a beautiful little chant for him.
It doesn't mean anything, but, you know, it's nice. It's nice to settle his nerves a little bit. But again, it means nothing.
Hopefully he kicks on, and this could be the game for it. Maybe he'll come on, play well. I hope that we start a midfield of Partey, Rice, and Odegaard. I think we'll be more successful in the game if we do that. But I think Havertz could come on later on, maybe play center forward or come into midfield if we need more attacking change. But yeah, I think it's we have a lot of options. I think fitness-wise, we're not exactly where we want to be, but I think Manchester City aren't as well. They have a few injuries. They have, you know, red card. I think Foden's not fully fit. I don't know if Foden's going to play in this game. You know, they lost a depth player in Cole Palmer. I know they have Mateus Nunez now, but and Jeremy Doku, but they're like having to start those players now. I don't know how, you know, I know they've both been very good.
Doku's
right
ready.
Now.
Doku's yeah, no, and it looks like Nunez against, as well, but against Ben White.
No, yeah, I agree with that, but I think that it's telling that they're having to play these players so quickly. They needed the depth, and let's see how both teams can handle it. I mean, they have away at Leipzig tomorrow in the Champions League. It's going to be Wednesday. You know, we're going to have the game on Sunday. It is going to be one more day of rest for us. It might be that around the 70th minute, you know, you see a little bit of a leggy Manchester City team, and, you know, it's been a little bit weird for them, you know, for Manchester City. This is now two losses in a row. You know, they lost in the cup as well in the midweek, got kicked out of the Carabao Cup. We didn't talk about that, but they've now had two losses in a row, so it's kind of unheard of for Manchester City to lose three games in a row and for Pep to lose two in the league. I don't remember the last time that happened either. So having said that, Alex, I think we win 2-1. I think Haaland scores, but we have enough to just do it. We haven't beaten them in what, like 4 or 5 years in the league. It's gotta come wilt at some point.
I'm trying to understand what the formula is for Arsenal to win. I can think of one, but I don't think Arteta will go with that.
I think
we
keep
system.
It a close game until, you know, the second half, and if it's still 1-1 or
I'm talking about like 1-0
City
the
or
game.
Something, we can score a couple of goals at the end of the game. We have, I think, more options right now than Manchester City do. And, you know, we could bring someone on and change the game. Score that way.
More than Manchester City? I don't know, man. Here's my idea. I know you're going to shoot it down, but here it is anyway. I don't think you start Nketiah in this. I think you need to start Kai Havertz as the false nine. Like, he was so successful playing that false nine for Chelsea in the Champions League final that he scored the winner in. You move Jesus out to the left wing in Martinelli's absence. You pray that Saka is ready to go on the right wing, and you play the exact midfield that you mentioned, Rice, Partey, Odegaard. And you have Kai Havertz dropping into midfield, leaving that space vacant, you know, in the front line for Saka and Jesus to make darting runs into. And yes, you try to possess to a degree and keep the ball, but you also need to be willing to, you know, sort of cede possession a little bit to Manchester City and let them shoot themselves in the foot with a bad giveaway that you guys can then pounce on and play a ball in behind. Because, I mean, we saw even in that game today, the Lens game, Jesus and Saka, when Lens gave away the ball, they were on it immediately, and Jesus got some of his best chances and his goal from opportunities like that. And those outside to inside runs that Jesus can make are, you know, that's where Pep Guardiola was playing him when Jesus was still at City for years. He can play that, but it needs to be a bit more of a counter-attacking system and less of a system where you're trying to keep the ball for the majority of the game. I don't think that's how Arteta is going to approach it. I think he's going to stick to his guns, and that's going to end up being Arsenal's undoing. So we'll see how it goes. I put two other way too early previews, games that stood out to me in this. Brighton-Liverpool at 9 a.m. on Sunday, and West Ham-Newcastle Sunday at 9 a.m. There are a bunch of games on Saturday as well, but all the good ones seem to be on Sunday this week. Either of those jump out to you?
Yeah, I think Brighton, they're really going to have to, you know, show their mettle here against Liverpool, who are going to be, you know, reeling a little bit from that VAR decision and the two red cards. You know, I think offensively, both of these teams are just going to pile it on, and I could see this being a crazy, you know, 4-4, some crazy game like that. I think there's going to be a lot of goals in these games, in that game. The West Ham-Newcastle game, that one could end 0-0. Or like 1-0 Newcastle. Good.
But they're, you know, they're
so I would watch the Brighton-Liverpool game if you want to watch goals. There will be many. But I don't like that De Serbi's like alternating his keepers like week to week. I do think that that's a little bit detrimental to the team because it seems to be like you never know who's going to start each week and each game because he changes his mind every single week. So it's kind of bizarre. Not really seen that very much in coaching before. I think there's been coaches who've done it, but not to much success. So
watch, now that you say that, Arteta's going to start Ramsdale against City this weekend.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Alex, but you know, Raya did play in Champions League and gave away the ball for the first goal for Lens. So it was a very, very bad giveaway playing out the back. I don't think that means necessarily that you bench him for Manchester City, but, you know, strike one.
All right, Javier. It's the end of the pod. You know what that means. 90 seconds. Give me your fantasy picks of the week. Go.
90 seconds, Javier. I don't know about 90 seconds. 90 Alex, seconds. But, all right. So, you know, what I was going to tell people is there is an international break coming up. So if you have transfers, maybe save them. You know, because there's going to be a lot that goes on in these next couple of weeks. You're going to want both of your transfers. I wouldn't necessarily use them. But there are a few players that if you do need to transfer them in, I would bring them in right now are Ollie Watkins. You know, after 3 goals and 2 assists, it's interesting. I mean, it kind of sounds like you need Watkins, Alvarez, and Haaland. If Watkins keeps scoring, which is going to cost, you know, cause a big shift in your midfield, you're gonna have to sell some players. I know that I'm thinking of doing something like that, but I think there's a lot of moves that need to be made based on, you know, what we're seeing so far. Watkins, if Villa have a really good run these next 6 or 7 games, he could score, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 goals in these next few games. So I think he's definitely be a player that you should be looking to bring in. Another one I really like that keeps getting returns is Bowen. You know, we keep seeing Bowen. I've also talked about Neto on this pod. But I think, you know, because there's this Manchester City-Arsenal game, I think a lot of people's teams will be tied up in that game. And your game week might swing one way or the other based on that game. So this is kind of a weird game week because of that. So, you know, not too worried about this game week. I'd say save your transfers for the international break if you don't need to make the transfers. I don't think Ollie Watkins is going to necessarily go up that much in price until the international break. But maybe, you know, if you do want to bring him in, he might go up, you know, a little bit over there, and it might be a good profit to make. So look for transfers like that where a player is underpriced and a lot of people are buying into the player. It means that, you know, the player is going to go up in price and you might be able to make a profit. And later on in the season, you might, you know, sell Ollie Watkins when he's not doing well, but he might be worth 8.5, 8.6 mil, and you might be able to you know, upgrade on him to someone, you know, more expensive. So it's an interesting part of the game that I like to play as well, and it's part of my strategy. So giving it to you guys right now.
All right. Well, thank you, Javier, for that great insight from the second place in the Ghost Goal Podcast Fan League. I, as the first place,
Alex,
continue
for once you're doing well and you start talking, huh?
To keep my cards close to the vest. I want to continue in first place for as long as possible. Javier, thank you for jumping on this one with me. Good luck this weekend. I don't actually mean it, but you know, I hope you're not too miserable.
Do you want to win the league again, Alex?
It's different. I just don't want Arsenal to win the league, and Manchester City just happened to be the team that prevent Arsenal from winning the league, so it keeps me happy. If you want to follow Javier on Twitter, you can follow him at JavierRev9. You can follow me at ASMoss92, and you can follow the podcast at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy the football this week, and until next time, See you.